I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. New York, this is Democracy Now!
Hard as it may seem, given that the war on terror has stretched for over 20 years, but this might be the most dangerous moment I've ever observed in the Middle East. Whether it's the United States or Iran and each of their various allies, the escalatory pressures of the current war emerging from Israel's devastation of Gaza are tremendous.
From Iraq to Lebanon to Pakistan to the Red Sea, can Israel's war on Gaza escalate into a full-blown regional conflict? We'll speak with award-winning journalist Spencer Ackerman. But first, Gaza's the deadliest place for journalists on record.
More journalists have been killed in Israel's assault on Gaza, nearly all of them Palestinian, than have ever been killed in a single country over an entire year. Many of those journalists who are still alive have lost their family members, have lost their homes. So this really is a war on journalists in Gaza.
We'll speak with independent journalist Sharif Abdelkadous and Sharif Mansour with the Committee to Protect Journalists. We'll take an in-depth look at a new investigation into the killing of an Al Jazeera cameraman last month. And what do Israelis see on TV? How has Israeli media's coverage shaped opinions of the war? We'll go to Tel Aviv to speak with Haaretz journalist Gideon Levy. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Pakistan has condemned Iran for violating its airspace and killing two children in air attacks less than a day after Iranian attacks in Iraqi Kurdistan killed at least four people. Iranian media said two bases of the Jaish al-Adl militants in Balochistan were destroyed late Tuesday, though there has been no official confirmation from Tehran of its responsibility. Pakistan recalled its ambassador from Iran and said the Iranian ambassador to Pakistan would be barred from returning. This comes amidst escalating tensions that are spreading throughout the Middle East. The U.S. carried out its third strike against Yemen's Houthi forces Tuesday. The White House also announced it's redesignating the Houthi militia as a terrorist group and reimposing penalties on the Iran-backed group in retaliation for their attacks in the Red Sea, which have led to no casualties but have disrupted global trade. The group's vowed to continue its campaign in the Red Sea as long as Israel continues to attack Gaza. On Tuesday, a Greek vessel headed to Israel was hit by a Houthi missile. We'll have more on the possibility of a wider conflict later in the broadcast. In Gaza, displaced civilians are again fleeing as intense Israeli bombardment rains down on Khan Yunis, including the area around its main hospital, Al-Nasser. Israeli ground forces have also been reported in the area. Overnight, Palestinian journalist Bissan Alda was able to post a video from the hospital despite a five-day-long communications blackout. Bissan Alda said she feared it could be her final update.
The medical staff, the ambulances, many people also evacuated the hospital, and that's so dangerous. This is the last functioning hospital in Gaza. That means that thousands of injuries are still now alone in the hospital. Displaced people are alone in the hospital. They are besieged. We are besieged. I don't know if I can survive this or go anywhere. I'm just alone. Alone as thousands. Alone as many in other hospitals were before.
Bissan Alda did survive the night and called on her followers to observe a global strike against the war next week. Qatar and France have brokered a deal for medicine to enter Gaza for the remaining Israeli hostages in exchange for aid for Palestinians. This comes amidst a worsening humanitarian catastrophe as a UN rights expert asserted, quote, every single person in Gaza is hungry. The death toll has topped 24,000. Meanwhile, Saudi Arabia's foreign minister said Tuesday Saudi Arabia could recognize Israel if the conflict's resolved and includes Palestinian statehood. Israel's deadly attacks in the occupied West Bank continue, with at least 7 Palestinians killed over the past day. On Tuesday, mourners attended the funeral of 21-year-old Ahad Mohammed in Dura, near the West Bank city of Hebron, after she was killed during an Israeli raid Monday. This is her sister.
Ahed was martyred here on the rooftop of her parents-in-law's house, where there was supposed to be a wedding next Friday. In our tradition, people come to arrange stuff for the bride. This is why Ahed was here. Ahed has a 6-month-old daughter. Her name is Ayul. She left Ayul behind. She left her to be a daughter of a martyr with no memories with her mother because they didn't have the chance to make memories together.
The Palestinian Health Ministry says Israeli forces have killed some 350 West Bank Palestinians since October 7th. In addition, at least 94 houses have been destroyed across the occupied territory, displacing 602 Palestinians, including 263 children, since October 7th. That's according to the United Nations. On Monday, an elderly Israeli woman was killed and 17 people injured, including children, after a ramming and stabbing attack in the central Israeli city of Ra'anana. A Palestinian man and his nephew have been detained as suspects. Here in the United States, senators voted against a resolution advanced by Senator Bernie Sanders Tuesday that would have required the Biden administration to provide Congress with a report on how U.S. arms are being used in Israel and its human rights violations in Palestine. Just 11 senators backed Sanders' measure. Of the 11 backers, only 3 have called for a ceasefire in Gaza: Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts, Peter Welch, and Jeff Merkley. Dick Durbin is the 4th U.S. senator to call for a ceasefire. Ben & Jerry's Ice Cream has joined calls for an immediate and permanent ceasefire in Gaza. Ben & Jerry's board chair, Anuradha Mittal, said in an interview with the Financial Times the ice cream company has long stood by the principle of peace. Meanwhile, on Capitol Hill, some 130 Mennonite protesters were arrested Tuesday during a peaceful sit-in in the Cannon House office building. Demonstrators sang hymns and chanted, "Let Gaza live." Meanwhile, in the latest crackdown by U.S. colleges on Palestinian voices, Indiana University canceled the first U.S. retrospective of renowned artist Samia Halabi. Halabi, who is an Indiana University alum, was informed her social media posts on the Israeli assault expressing solidarity with Gazans under attack was the reason for the cancellation. The exhibition had been in the works for over 3 years. Texas Republican Governor Greg Abbott is facing more condemnation for his support of anti-immigrant and border enforcement policies that led to the recent deaths of another 3 asylum seekers attempting to cross the Rio Grande near the border city of Eagle Pass. The mother and her 2 young children have been identified as 33-year-old Victorina de la Sancha Cerros, Yorlai Ruby, and Jonathan Agustin Briones de la Sancha, who were 10 and 8 years old. They were from Mexico. Their drowning Friday came just days after Texas troopers took over about 2.5 miles of the U.S.-Mexico border, including Shelby Park near Eagle Pass, a city park on the banks of the Rio Grande, denying access to U.S. Border Patrol attempting to respond to rescue calls. The area has also been blocked off with fencing, gates, and razor wire. The Biden administration has given Governor Abbott until today to remove the barriers after the Justice Department Friday petitioned the U.S. Supreme Court to intervene against Texas. Texas Congressmember Joaquin Castro said, quote, "This is what Operation Lone Star looks like on the ground. Texas officials block Border Patrol agents from doing their job and allow 2 children to drown in the Rio Grande. Governor Abbott's inhumanity has no limit. Everyone who enables his cruelty has blood on their hands," Castro said. Bipartisan Congress members agreed to a $78 billion short-term funding bill that would avert a partial government shutdown Friday while expanding the child tax credit and restoring business tax breaks, among other things. The deal was put forward by Democratic Senator Ron Wyden, chair of the Senate Finance Committee, and Republican Jason Smith, chair of the House Ways and Means Committee. But it's not clear if the measure can garner enough support to pass. Some Democrats say the child tax credit doesn't go far enough and are pushing for the same deal as during the pandemic-era American Rescue Plan. The Center on Budget and Policy Priorities forecasts the plan would lift some 400,000 children out of poverty in its first year. Meanwhile, President Biden's expected to meet with congressional leaders at the White House today amidst deadlocked talks over his request for $100 billion in supplemental funding for Ukraine and Israel's military and Taiwan, which Republicans have insisted be tied to further militarizing the U.S.-Mexico border. The UN's Human Rights Office is calling on Alabama to halt its first planned execution of a prisoner using nitrogen gas asphyxiation later this month.
We have serious concerns that Smith's execution in these circumstances could breach the prohibition on torture or other cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment or punishment, as well as his right to effective remedies. These are rights that are set out in two international human rights treaties that the U.S. is bound by.
Kenneth Eugene Smith is scheduled to be executed next Thursday, January 25th, after losing his appeal at the Alabama Supreme Court. In November 2022, prison officials called off another execution attempt against Smith after they were unable to establish an IV line for his lethal injection. Smith's lawyers argued subjecting him to a second execution attempt constitutes cruel and unusual punishment. In D.C., the Capitol Police and FBI are investigating statements attributed to longtime Trump associate Roger Stone, who reportedly said two top Democratic lawmakers and Trump critics have to die weeks before the 2020 election. The website Mediaite reports the comments targeting Congressmembers Eric Swalwell and Jerry Nadler were made to Stone associate Salvatore Greco, a former New York City policeman, and posted audio of the encounter.
Either Swalwell or Nadler has to die before the election. They need to get the message.
Either Swalwell or Nadler has to die before the election. They need to get the message, says the recording. Mediaite reports an unnamed source believes Stone was, quote, not joking around. Roger Stone has dismissed the reports and the recording as AI manipulation. And as world leaders are gathering in Davos, Switzerland, for the World Economic Forum, Oxfam issued a new report showing the world's five richest billionaires have seen their wealth double over the past 4 years, while 5 billion others have become poorer. Oxfam is predicting the world could have its first trillionaire in a decade. Oxfam's interim executive director, Amitabh Bihar, spoke in Davos.
I certainly feel angry. You know, I would say having billionaires is a failure. Very often when we are here at the World Economic Forum, you end up celebrating billionaires. But I think it's a sign of failure that we have 800 million people, 10% of the global population, sleeping hungry. They do not have enough food to eat. 800 million people. And on the other hand, you have these billionaires with their private yachts, private jets, and a lifestyle which cannot even be understood.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. It's freezing cold here, Juan, in New York. How about Chicago?
Yeah, even colder here, Amy. Welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
Well, Israel's bombardment of Gaza from the land, air and sea continued today, much of it in the southern part of the territory, in the cities of Khan Yunis and Rafah. At least 163 Palestinians have been killed in Gaza in the last 24 hours, according to the Gaza Health Ministry. Some of the worst shelling hit the western side of Khan Yunis, which was designated in the early stages of Israel's assault on Gaza as a so-called safe zone by Israel. There's also been intense Israeli bombardment in the vicinity of Nasser Hospital, the main hospital in the city, and tanks and armored vehicles are on the main road leading to the area. Among the places hit in Khan Yunis was a school sheltering displaced Palestinians. An eyewitness described the attack.
We saw death with all colors. The tanks entered. We saw everything vividly. It was horrible. Random shelling, random fire, random killing. They are coming just to kill and go back home. This is a Nakba. They are just coming to kill children, women, elderly, in the bathroom, in the school, in the hospital, in the street, anywhere. They killed us. They are just coming to kill only. Just that. Just killing.
The interruption of communications and internet services in Gaza for days has continued for the fifth consecutive day, the longest telecommunications blackout of the war so far. This has caused delays for emergency workers to respond to airstrikes and has hampered media coverage from Palestinian journalists in Gaza. Meanwhile, Al Jazeera's bureau chief, Wael al-Dadu, left Gaza on Tuesday, crossing into Egypt and flying to Qatar to receive medical treatment. Dadu has come to symbolize both the suffering and resilience of Palestinian journalists in Gaza. In October, four members of his family were killed, including his wife, his 15-year-old son, his 7-year-old daughter, and his grandson, in an Israeli strike on a refugee camp where they were seeking shelter after their home was bombed. Last week, his eldest son, 27-year-old Hamza, also a journalist, was killed, along with another journalist in an Israeli airstrike on their car in Khan Yunis. Dadu will receive medical treatment in Doha for a wound he received when Israel bombed the area he was in that ended up killing his camera person, Samer Abu Daka. By some counts, over 110 journalists have been killed in Gaza since October 7th. The Committee to Protect Journalists has found more journalists have been killed in the first 10 weeks of Israel's war on Gaza than have ever been killed in a single country over an entire year. For more, we're joined by two guests. Sherif Abdelkaddous is an independent journalist and a Democracy Now! Correspondent. His latest piece for The Intercept investigates the killing of Abu Daka. It's headlined, Israel bombed an Al Jazeera cameraman and blocked evacuation efforts as he bled to death. He's joining us from here in New York. In Washington, D.C., we're joined by Sherif Mansour, the Middle East and North Africa Program Coordinator for the Committee to Protect Journalists. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Before we talk to Sherif about the cameraman, the Al Jazeera cameraman, who bled to death over 5 hours, can we put this in a broader context, Sherif Mansour? Talk about the astounding number, the horrific number of journalists who have died in Gaza.
Well, thank you for having me again, Amy. I've already talked to you about this at least twice, and the number only goes higher. The deadly pattern we discuss become more deadly. And we have since talked about the apparent pattern of targeting, again, journalists, their families, and specifically when we discuss Al Jazeera and Al Dahdouh's family, they really are rewriting what it means to be a journalist today with immense, brave, and never seen before sacrifices. The Palestinian journalists, local journalists so far, 76 out of 83 we've counted since the start of the war are Palestinians. The overwhelming majority are killed by the Israeli army. The Israeli army has killed more journalists in the span of those 3 months than any other entity or army have done over a course of 1 year since 1992. This is the most dangerous and we've never seen any assignment like this before. Of course, what we called on is independent and transparent and thorough investigation. We want to see the case of Al Dahdouh, his son, Al Jazeera, and others that show culpability of the Israeli army to be put to public scrutiny by allowing immediate entry to international media and international investigators into Gaza without censorship by the Israeli army. The killing must stop, and for that to happen, the record must be made public, and U.S., European, and other allies of Israel need to call Israel on that record and ensure those investigations are made immediately public.
And Sharif Mansour, what has been the response of the Israeli government and the Israeli Defense Forces, given the enormous number of journalists killed? Have they accepted any culpability at all for any of these killings?
The cases of precise attacks by drones against Al Jazeera, which happened at least twice in the last 4 weeks, included for the first time the Israeli army taking responsibility of doing those attacks, but also doing as they done in the past when they are held responsible, because the case of a journalist is someone who was behind an international news organization. They said they will investigate, but they also push false narratives, claims that they are terrorists, or that they were part of an ongoing crossfire. And as we've seen in past incidents before this war, this time around, three narratives pushed by the Israeli army, correcting and changing and providing nothing more than a questionable document with English for the first time, coming from what they said was a terrorist group, but providing no other evidence that support their claim, and have so far the outlets, eyewitnesses, and the families of the journalists have denied the Israeli army narratives and showed to the contrary that, for example, Hamza, an Al Jazeera journalist, was approved to travel before his father, Wael Dahdouh, did yesterday, after Israel vetted him. And if he was wanted by any chance, he wouldn't have had this approval before he was killed. And all our testimony and accounts that we and others are showing the contradicting nature of these narratives. This is also the same narrative we said happened before this war started in our Deadly Pattern report. And it is apparent of responses designed to evade responsibilities by throwing the word terrorists, by also pushing out those narratives until the world look away.
Well, and Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International are both calling for Israel to be officially investigated for war crimes and its targeting of journalists, not only in Gaza, but outside of Gaza, because an internal Reuters investigation found that one of its journalists, Issam Abdallah, was killed by an Israeli tank shell fired on him and a group of six other journalists in southern Lebanon on October 13th. Could you talk about these attacks outside of Gaza?
So we saw the same pattern of disregard for press insignia that we reported before this war. 13 out of 20 journalists killed by IDF fire over 21 years were press signs and press insignias showing that they are media personnel. And like those cases, the case of Issam Abdallah show with independent investigation, physical proof, forensic proof from the scene, in addition to mapping, audio and visual analysis by international human rights groups and international media organization, that show that those journalists did not pose any threat to Israeli government positions, that they have been seen by an Israeli drone at least an hour, that they were visibly expressing or showing press signs and on laser cameras, and the position that they have taken was a high vantage hill that did not obscure their location with being close to any camera or house that justify that they would have any threat. And all of these and other evidence have shown that what we show in the past, in the cases of at least three journalists that we categorized as murder before this case, including Shireen Abu Aqla and Yasser Murtaja and Mahmoud Abu Hussein, who were killed in Gaza, that there was no justification for the use of lethal force by the Israeli army. And those and other cases watch that we call for independent investigation as war crimes, because the Israeli army did not live up to their commitments and obligation under international law.
And, of course, Shireen Abu Aqla was killed May 11, 2022, outside the Jenin refugee camp. Sharif Abdelkaddous did a George Polk Award-winning documentary on the killing of Shireen Abu Aqla. He's joining us as well. But, Sharif, I wanted to ask you about this latest piece you did for The Intercept that's headlined, Israel bombed an Al Jazeera cameraman and blocked evacuation efforts as he bled to death. Give us the TikTok, the chronology on what happened on that horrific day when he and Wael Al-Dadou, who is the Gaza bureau chief for Al Jazeera, went to the school that was bombed. Tell us exactly what happened.
Right, Amy. And when we talk about the killing of Palestinian journalists in Gaza, this was an incident on December 15th where much of the world watched as hours ticked by as Samra Bouda'a was wounded and prevented from getting medical care by Israel and eventually died. And so that timeline of what happened, I think, is extremely important. But basically, Wael Al-Dahdouh, who is Al Jazeera's bureau chief in Gaza, went with Samra Bouda'a, who's a 20-year veteran journalist, a cameraman. They went to this school in Khan Yunis, which had been bombed earlier in the day, and they were accompanied by a team of civil defense workers. That team had received, had requested and received approval by the Israeli military through the Red Cross to be in the area. They got there around noon. They spent about 2.5 hours in the area. This is according to Wael Al-Dahdouh. And as they were wrapping up their coverage, he said there were hardly anyone in the area. There were drones buzzing overhead. They were just about to leave and go back to the ambulance that had brought them there when a strike hit them at about 2:30 p.m. Wael Al-Dahdouh was thrown to the ground. He said he, when he got up and kind of regained awareness, he realized he was bleeding quite profusely from his arm and that he would bleed to death if he didn't get medical attention. He looked over and saw the three civil defense workers who were accompanying them had been killed instantly. And then at a small distance away, he saw his colleague, Samra Bouda'a, on the ground. He had been wounded in the lower part of his body. Wael said that he seemed like he was screaming. Wael, at that point, had lost much of his hearing from the blast, and that Samer couldn't get up. Wael realized the only chance that both of them had was for him to get to medical attention and get help to bring Samer out, because he couldn't get up. So Wael somehow stumbled across about 800 meters to the ambulance that was waiting. He begged them to go in and get Samer, but they insisted on evacuating him first to a hospital in Khan Yunis and that another ambulance would go retrieve him. There are videos of Wael Al-Dahdouh receiving treatment, wincing in pain, calling on people to go get Samer, telling them to coordinate with the Red Cross. What we understand from Wael and others is that an ambulance did go immediately to try and retrieve Samer from the area, but that they were fired on or in their area, in their proximity, by Israeli forces. At the same time, Al Jazeera's bureau chief in Ramallah, Walid Al-Omari, was making calls to the Red Cross. This is around 3:30 p.m. and asking the Red Cross to liaise with the Israeli military to allow four emergency crews to reach Samra Bouda'a and Khan Yunis. So the Israeli military knew at least by 3 or 3:30 that there was a wounded journalist who lay helpless that needed evacuation. And at the same time, news was spreading of Samra Bouda'a's plight. And there's a group called the Foreign Press Association, which is a Jerusalem-based nonprofit representing reporters, mostly foreign reporters from over 30 countries. And there's a WhatsApp group, which has about 140 of these journalists on it. One of the journalists, a freelance reporter and producer based in Jerusalem named Orly Halpern, posted just after 3 p.m., about Samer's plight and told the journalists or called on them to call Israeli military spokespeople and to demand that Samer be evacuated. And so the FPA was getting involved. Senior members of the FPA, the Foreign Press Association were getting involved, calling Israeli military officials, Israeli military spokespeople, senior ones, repeatedly asking for passage for Semir. And from what we understand at The Intercept, we obtained screenshots of this WhatsApp group from multiple journalists in the group, and also from speaking with people involved in these efforts, that for hours, Israel did not give approval to these ambulances. Finally, after about 5 hours after Semir was initially wounded, a bulldozer was finally approved to go through to reach Semir. But by then, he had already died. He had bled out. He was found with, he seemed to have removed his flak jacket and had tried to crawl and had died. And it was incredibly tragic. He had lain there. Al Jazeera had posted a live counter of the hours and minutes since he was wounded on its broadcast, and people were just watching, and he eventually died. And the next day, Jazeera announced he was preparing a legal file to submit to the International Criminal Court over what